I'm Neely Daniel and an alcoholic. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous the first time in September of 43, but I had to drink a couple more years before I had my last drink. So the last drink I had was July the 4th, 1945. We, this afternoon, are going to try to record some of the early history of AA in Atlanta. And we have a good many people here that are going to talk about their experiences in AA. And we hope that it will be profitable and well worth our time. And to those people that are coming along who want to know what happened in Alcoholics Anonymous in its early years, we hope they can find that here, because we'll leave it in the central office for people that are here now that come after us. I'm going to call on Joe F. and let him carry on from here.
My name is Joe P.
My name is Joe P., and I am an alcoholic. And I think I'm in here a little early because on the right of me is Mac, and I'm going to turn it over to him for a moment now for the real early days in Atlanta.
Well, thank you, Joe. Dane McNamara is my name, and I'm an alcoholic. Came into the old Broad Street group, which was the only group at that time, in June of 42. And I didn't immediately get sober. I had a number of slips, unfortunately, up to November of that year, November of 42. And since then, by the grace of God, I have been sober. And I have a tender feeling yet to that old group. I look back with a great deal of appreciation because they spent a lot of time working with me, and I'm especially grateful that they kept me a secretary so long up there, because that was a factor in me staying sober, hating to fall down. And I know that I wasn't a good secretary, but they did tolerate me for about 3 years. And I was thinking this morning and how much I should appreciate that particular group, what they had done for me. Well, can't go into, this is not the time or place to go into great detail, but I have found that AA without quitting is the solution to this problem. And I would commend it to anybody that's interested or needs it. My older year now, of course. But I still look forward to a few more years, and it's been a great association with you all and many others. Thank you for the opportunity to say these few words.
Thank you, Mac. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Fred N. By the way, the date of this meeting is the 19th of August in 1979. If anybody wants to put a pencil to some of this. You won't. So before I get to Fred N., who has always been very active in the downtown area of Alcoholics Anonymous in Atlanta, I'm going to give it back to Neely for some real early stuff.
As Mac says, we just had one group in Atlanta when he came in and when I came in, too, for a long time after that. As well as I can remember, I was the fourth lady to come in Alcoholics Anonymous in Atlanta, and there are one or two things I'd like for you to know that I don't hear about anywhere. Ruth F. Mrs. Duncan was our first lady. And Miss Duncan drank beer and paregoric. Always ordered a beer and put paregoric in it. Well, that was her drink. So she decided that she wanted to do something about it. I think she'd been to Milledgeville. And she had heard about Flynn. What's his first name?
Bert Flynn.
Bert Flynn. Heard a lot. There was a lot written about Bert Flynn about that time. He'd been in jail more times than anybody else. And so she called Bert Flynn's mother. She couldn't get Bert. And she said Bert wasn't there. And she waited a while, and she called back again. She said, Bert wasn't there. And the third time, Miss Flynn said, what did you want to see Bert about? She said, I'm an alcoholic, and I wanted to talk to him about Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, won't do any good. Don't have any luck with the women. No luck with the women. She didn't stop there, though. She came on in, and she was the first lady member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I look back on Alcoholics Anonymous, my years in the program, it's been wonderful for a lot and lot of reasons. But I want to say two things. The men in Alcoholics Anonymous have always treated me with the utmost respect, with every consideration. When I went to New York as a delegate from the state of Georgia, I didn't know what they were going to think about me. They hadn't had a woman before. And I didn't know what the reception was going to be. I didn't know whether they just ignored me or not. But they didn't do that. They took me under their wing, and they saw that I was taken care of every minute. Were just lovely. Tom Sharp was one of those men, and he and I have been devoted friends ever since. And we used to have a man named Fisk McIntosh that came to Atlanta a lot in his work. And he was good at AA. You remember Mac? Fisk McIntosh? And he liked AA in Atlanta. And he talked whenever he came. And he told me one time, this was not in a meeting, just as visiting, he said, I'm going to tell you that I traveled all over the United States and visited AA. And Atlanta has the finest group of women of any AAs in this country. And I thought that was a great compliment, and I think we still have the finest group of women that I know anywhere. And now I'm going to turn it back to Fred.
My name is Fred Norris, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I was coerced into going to AA by my wife. And I sat on the back row for a few months and wondered what was going on the front row and didn't learn much. So I got drunk again. So I made another 3 months, same way. Then I wandered around Atlanta for 2 weeks in a blackout. I have no idea what happened. On November the 29th, 1948, I was sitting on the side of the bed with a bottle of wine in my hand. I made the statement that I can't drink and stay sober at the same time. And I also said I got one sock on and one off, and I don't know whether I'm going to bed or getting up. That's how confused I was that Sunday morning. But I knew the AA club room would be open that day. And I didn't take that drink that morning. I went back to the club room on the third floor of a little building down on Hunter Street. And I knew there'd be 25 or 30 people there that Sunday morning. And I went down with one thought in mind. Today I'm going without a drink if it kills me. And I made that day. and I made every day since without a drink. That was the only club room in town at that time. We had two meetings a week on Tuesday and Friday. Pretty soon after I was in, we had to move from there. We moved over to 522 West Peachtree Street. And that's the finest facility we've ever had in Atlanta, to my knowledge. We had a big operation over there. We had a secretary then. Our secretaries have changed since I came in. And we had a so-called club room and ante room for the visitors, and also a meeting room that would seat about 500 people. And we had a lot of big meetings there. But as all AAs know, we don't have any money. And the expenses were so high, we couldn't afford to stay there. So we had to make a move. And that's when we began to spread up and go out into different groups. The downtown club then moved down to Walton Street. A little upstairs building down there. No plumbing and no nothing, but we managed to take care of all of that in time. And that's when we began to have a lot of groups spreading out here and there over the city. And I've been active in this thing ever since that day I made that decision. I saw the downtown club go, and I saw the new downtown club come up. And I battled it for 20 years, trying to keep it going downtown. But eventually we had to give up downtown as a club, as a meeting place, because there's so many meetings in the areas now that we could pass six meetings going to the downtown meeting. So we finally closed up the downtown office. And I got the refrigerator, I know. I don't know who got everything else. But there was quite a shake-up down there at that time. But everything in general has worked out fine. We've got an awful lot of fine groups in the area now. And long about that time, in 54, 55, we opened a little office down on Fairley Street with the one secretary to handle the telephone. And we had what we called the Adelan Society. That was the financial agent for the AA groups. And the office and expenses were paid by donations from people. And what groups that could did contribute. And as time went on, our office did grow. Jack Fiedler was our first secretary. He was a retired man and didn't need a lot of money, which was good. Our next secretary was Arthur Yarber. He was also retired and didn't need a lot of money, so we were well blessed in that faction. But as time went on, we had to get a larger office, and we moved into a building on Walton Street, the Walton Building. And we've had several secretaries since then. I can't remember the names of all of them, but ever since that day that I came in, AA has been growing. From one group now to, I think we have about 145 groups in the city now, with possibly 200 meetings a week. So there's been an awful lot of work done for an awful lot of alcoholics that needed what I needed when I got here. I needed to learn how to live sober. And I found out that way in AA. And I certainly recommend it to anybody that's got a problem. And we're all waiting with the outstretched hand for anybody that wants to come in.
Yeah, this is Joe Phelan again, and I guess this is where I came in. I first went to my first AA meeting in December 1946. I was 25 years old, and it was up in Fall River, Massachusetts, my hometown. I got sober in March, on March the 1st, 1949, and my original home group was the Woobin Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a little unusual in that I was only 27 years old, and that was over 30 years ago. And in the greater Boston area, I was the youngest sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous for a couple of years. And then some young punk came in a couple of years later, was only 21 years old, he blew my record. And you know how devastating that is. My wife and our four children came to Atlanta in June of 1953. We were sober a little bit over 4 years, and we soon had another child. And my recollections of the, and we've been generally in the South since that time, most of it in Atlanta, with the exception of a year and a half in Charlotte and 6 months in Roanoke, Virginia, in the middle 50s. But my recollection when I was sober 4 years and came here to Atlanta, very striking for me. I was very concerned whether or not I could stay sober in a different locality. I was even fearful. And the people here welcomed us with open arms, and I soon found out that Alcoholics Anonymous was the same here as it was back home. And it might be interesting to note that I believe there were four and possibly five groups in Greater Atlanta when we came here in 1953. There was the Buckhead group that I went to. There was the group out in the West End called the Crosstown group, which was near my office at that time, and I used to go there on Friday nights. There was the Northeast group, and of course there was the Downtown group. There were those four groups, and possibly there was one other that I'm not familiar with. And my general feeling was that I was warned before I came south by my sponsors in the North, and they said that you people were all godhoppers down here. And I found out that was true, and I'm very glad about that, because I think in Alcoholics Anonymous that finding a power greater than myself has been the most important facet of being able to stay sober and to live joyfully. I just want to say one other thing, and that is that it's been a great source of joy and pride and to me to see the tremendous, and be a part of it to a small extent, of the tremendous growth in Alcoholics Anonymous, both in Atlanta and in our area and in our state. And I think we are very much blessed to have been able to spend practically all of my sober AA life in Atlanta and in the South, and we're very, very grateful for this. I think now I'd like to pass it over to some of the people who are here who had to do with the starting of the groups that Fred talked about. In the middle 50s and late 50s, our group started to go. And on my left is a young man who, for the best reason in the world, started a group called the Skyland Group. It happens to be my home group at the present time, and I'm going to pass it over to Clarence R.
I'm Clarence Robbins, and I'm an alcoholic. I had been on a six-day drunk, and my minister called Bennett Smith. And on September 21st, 1954, I went to my first meeting in Buckhead Group. At that time, there were five groups in Atlanta. In February 1955, I saw the need for a group in my area so I wouldn't have to go so far, and I started the Skyland Group. It's still in existence and will celebrate its 25th birthday in February 1980. In April of 1956, Tri-City group was started, in 1955 it was. And in January of 1956, the Ansley group was started. From that, other groups have started all over Atlanta. until it reached its peak. Most of the groups that started in Atlanta were in the 60s. The growth started then when Atlanta started spreading out. The first institutional groups were started in the 60s. We first started the first one at Stone Mountain, then the one in Milledgeville, one at Reedsville, and the oldest one, institutional group, which is one of the oldest groups in Atlanta, was at the Federal Pen, which was before my time. Yeah. And it's still going on to my knowledge. Thank you, Joe.
Not only started a group, but had a lot of AA in the most difficult of circumstances. This is John F. and Nick's talking.
I'm John Flemish, and I'm very grateful. Recovering alcoholic. Hello, everybody. And sober another day by the grace of God. Working through the fellowship of AA. You know, at this meeting and reflection back there of many things that I have to be grateful for. And reflecting back in 1952 when I had drank enough for me and I was ready for AA. And thank God that the seeds of AA was planted in our community on the southwest side of Atlanta. I came into AA, came to AA, and into AA in 1952, February, the 23rd of February. And the seed had been planted in our community as a result of a 12-step call by a member at that time by the name of Buck Rogers, whom is deceased. The first meeting, as I said, the result of that 12-step call was at the Cable Corporation on Murrieta Street in 1951, November. And I speak from hearsay, not so only hearsay, but from a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that came in a few months ahead of me in 1951. In November of 1951 is when the seed was planted on the southwest side as a result of a 12-step call by Buck Rogers on Lewis B., whom is still sober and active in AA today. And as a result of that call, Buck R. Marcel C. at that time, they had married, and they brought it to our community and paid the rent in a little double-tenant home on West Hunter Street. Paid the rent for 3 months. There were three in our group preceding me, and my wife Liz and I came in 1952. And you see, the seeds of AA had been planted. It had taken root, had sprouted, and began to grow. And then one shoot from that one seed began to grow close to where I live. And as a result of that, a year and a half later, in 1953, in September, the second group was started in the Midtown area, which is on Auburn Avenue and Young Street, which is now still active and will be celebrating its 26th anniversary in next month, September. And this group was started as a result of another 12-step call and needing a group on the east side of downtown. And the miracle working power of God, unforeseen, that continues to grow and grow and grow. And it's with a deep feeling of gratitude today that I am sober by His grace, and what joy of living it is, sharing our feelings of strength and hope with one another. And there are many, many rewards. I could go on and on. But this is a beautiful life, a wonderful way of life. In order to keep, we have to give it away. Thank you.
Thank you, John. We've heard a lot about the Buckhead Group, which was here in 53 and before when I came here. And we've got one of the members here, Hal, and maybe you would give us some recollections of Buckhead, the Buckhead Group.
Thank you, Joe. I came in October 1949. The club room was down on Hunter Street, the only meeting in town. And from there, we moved to West Peachtree Street. And then in a couple of years, I guess, after that, we formed the Buckhead Group. That was the first autonomous group other than the downtown group formed in Atlanta. And I had the honor of serving on the first steering committee of the Buckhead Group. It is still active. A few years ago, we merged with the Peachtree Covenant Group, and it is now known as the Buckhead Covenant Group. I came in because my wife said she was going to leave me, and my boss said he was going to fire me in October. So I said I'll stay sober until after Christmas, then I'll take me another drink. And one of the traditions says that the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. But I'd just like to tell you that this program works, even though you may not have that honest desire, which I didn't have. I didn't tell you. My name is Hal Hendon, and I'm an alcoholic. I've said that a number of times, and why I forgot it this time, I don't know. But anyway, I thought I'd stay sober until after Christmas. I was traveling at the time, so I took a trip after Christmas, went up to Chattanooga. I got me a couple of quarts, a fist of whiskey, and I thought I'd take a few drinks, and nobody would ever know it. I thought that a number of times before, but they always knew it. But the first hotel I got into, I got my whiskey out, was ready to take a drink, and I said, now you've been going to AA, and they tell you if you can't stop drinking for one day at a time, you can stop drinking for 5 minutes at a time. So I said, I'll just wait a few minutes before I take a drink. I waited 5 minutes, and I waited another five. And through the grace of God and the members of AA, I haven't had a drink since. Thank you very much.
Now, I'm going to go around with some of the fellas with and ladies who have some things to share. And the next guy has been around a long time, Jim Kay. I'm going to pass this over to him.
And that's not... I'm Jim Kiley. I'm an alcoholic. I spoke maybe out of turn a little while ago when we started talking about the years of 52, 53, and 54. I'm very familiar with those years because I came into AA. My first meeting was December the 12th, 1952. Now, Fred said something about being coerced. I wasn't exactly coerced, but my wife married me again after divorcing me for 13 years. She married me again in July of 1952. When I kept on drinking, she finally said one night, she said one morning when I was awfully hungover, I said, "Will you go to AA?" And I said, "Oh, sure." I'd said anything that morning because I felt bad. A couple of nights later, we were coming along West Peachtree and driving, and my wife said, "You remember you said you'd go to AA?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, we do that sometime, too." She said, "Well, they meet right across the street there, and they meet in about 15 minutes. So I was hooked again, so I went to the meeting and on West Peachtree. That was at 522 West Peachtree. December the 12th, 1952 is really, I call that my birthday. I know birthdays are not celebrated this way in AA, but that's my birthday, regardless of what anybody thinks, because that that marked the change in my life. I started a new life. Now, I was suddenly taken drunk in 1956, and I knew this Joe Phelan. I'd met him in Atlanta, and I liked him, and he was up in Virginia, and I was up in Tennessee, and he mentioned me, called him. So I called up Joe. Now, I don't know why I did it, and I don't know what I said or what he said. But I was in North Carolina, and I wound up over in Charlotte, in the Charlotte Hotel, and I called AA. And two fellas came around to see me at the hotel. One of them had been in the program for several years, and the other was just a young fella. He was in about 3 or 4 months. And the old fella said, "Well, Jim, I don't know what I can tell you." He said, "You've been at AA. You know all the answers. Well, what have I got to tell you?" I said, "Well, nothing, but I'm so stupid right now, I can't think. And all I want you to do is please think for me and tell me what to do." And the young fellow speaks up and says, "One thing I can tell you, Jim, please don't get to be one of these chronic 90-day slippies. They're more trouble in AA than anybody I've ever seen." And you know, that hit me right between the eyes. In 30 minutes, I rid him of licking in the automobile on my way home. Now, I know when I came in December 1952 down on West Peachtree, it was wonderful. And I found something I wanted. I never had seen anything like it, never had heard anything like it. It went along until July 1953. And Lord, there's that big clubhouse down there, all that big facility, and it was going broke. Well, I said, "It sure has been fine while it lasted, but now the whole thing's going to fall flat on the face. Not going to be any more AA." But some fellas, and Fred was one of them, and Ed Harrell, Joe Harlan, some of you remember these names, told me, he said, "We found a place down on Walton Street. Come down and see it." So I went down on Walton Street to look at that place, and if you've ever seen a dirty, broken down place, that was it. The ceilings were hanging halfway down to the floor. There was an inch of dirt and dust all over the floor itself. The walls were terrible looking. Well, I said, this will never make an AA club room. A bunch of the folks got together, the ones that were down there, and they worked around the clock and straightened that place up. They had a meeting. Our meetings at on West Peach Street were Tuesdays and Fridays. And whatever day came next, they didn't skip a meeting. They had that place ready for a meeting on the next Tuesday or Friday, whichever it was. That was a tremendous inspiration to me because nobody would really do anything like that unless they were serious about it. And so I stayed in. Now, you mentioned something about when I became treasurer of the downtown club. We moved then down on Walton Street, and that was in July of 1953. And I know that Jack Fiedler was in the central office in April of 1954 because, and I know he'd been in before that because I was sitting in his office one day when a fella came in to get a big book. This fellow happened to come down here with the RSB company from Chicago to handle him, to help a fella straighten his business out. He found a fella, and the fella's name is Jack Curry, and he's been sober ever since that April of 1954. That one day, he was in Blackman's out here, and this fella from RSB went out and got him and took him to an AA meeting that night because he'd been in AA. And that was in April of 1954. But when I was sober a year, they had a policy at the downtown club that when anybody had a year of sobriety, they would be elected to the board. They had 7 members of the board because there were 7 nights in the week, and one member of the board had club responsibility one night a week. But when they got me elected to the board, they elected me president and treasurer. Now, Fred was a member of the board. He was instrumental. He coerced me into this. And who are the rest of them? Oh, there's several of them are still here now. And they handed me the bank book. It was $4.54 overdrawn. And they handed me the current bills that were due, and it was $150 worth of them, and I had to pay that out of $4.54. So I resigned. And somebody said, "No, Jim, don't bother now. Just leave it alone. Everything will come out all right. Things do like this in AA. Just leave them alone." Well, I left them alone, and suddenly they did come out all right. It worked out fine. And then after that, it worked out fine. They said, "Now there's a $500 note due over to CNS Bank at 11th Street." So that's due here next week. You better go down and handle that, too. Well, first time in my life I ever walked into a bank and said, "There's a note due, and I want to renew it." "Sure, how much you want to renew it for?" No question. Asked me who I was or whatnot. But some of the folks, including the members of the downtown club, had endorsed that note, gotten $500 to set up the building down there and get it started operating. And it operated up till 1956 when we moved down to 298 1/2 Peach Street in the corner down there. And went on to several other moves, and then finally had to close it up because downtown was not a location to have a meeting. People couldn't get downtown, didn't dare go downtown. Women especially couldn't get to those places downtown. So we had to give it up. Since then, I've kept active in AA, as active as I could, visited all the other groups. These groups that have been mentioned, I've been to all of them. And I've always considered my home group to be the downtown group and the Buckhead group, both of them. Somebody says, each one says they got a home group. I had 2 of them. Just like somebody says they had sponsors. I had 12 sponsors. I needed all of them. And I recommend that to anybody else. But as I say, December the 12th, 1952 was the beginning of my life, of this part of my life. I was 50 years old when I went to that first meeting. And I've had 2 lives. And this last one has been better than anything I ever expected. Never expected anything to be like it is now from the life I led before.
Always told us, and they tell us again and again, that working with others is the best antidote to getting drunk again. And the next guy, a fellow by the name of Joe, has got a reputation, and I think it's deserved, for maybe working with more drunks than anybody that I know particularly. So I'm going to pass it on to Joe Hubbard.
My name's Joe Hubbard, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
I feel quite honored in being invited to be with some of the old-timers of this fellowship, because I'm just so grateful they were here when my brother decided in December of 57 that I needed this program. And he called Alcoholics Anonymous, and 2 drunks came out to my house. And I'm glad that these 2 drunks hadn't heard that the alcoholic had to call before they made a 12-step call. If they had, I'd probably still be out there 6 feet under. But anyway, Andy Anderson and Rudy Horn came and got me one Sunday night. We went over to Buckhead, and that's when I met Hal. And Hal had all those years, and I asked him why in the hell, if he had all those years of sobriety, why he kept coming. And he said to stay sober, so I listened. And I was very fortunate. I hadn't wanted to drink since that night. I was a drunk for many, many years, but when I walked into an AA meeting, the desire and the need of compulsion for a drink, you immediately left me. I'll never understand it, but a lot of people in this room was very, very instrumental in keeping me involved. And there's 3 that's not here, this Grayson Wolf and Bob Griffin and Chris Fox and Clarence and Hal and Jim and many, and John over here. God knows I've cried on his shoulder many times. But God's been good to me. He's given me and my wife everything that we needed over these years, and I tell everybody today that I don't have to work for a damn living. I just enjoy it. In 1974, I was, God sent me to work with drunks, I guess, because I didn't know where I was going. And since that time, I've had the privilege of working around 5,000 of them in a little over 5 years. And a lot, some of them are sober. All I did is show them how they could get sober. And they believed it, those that wanted to get sober did. And then I got started with the AA meeting there, and we have 3 meetings a week, and on Sunday afternoon, each Sunday we have over around 400 people at this meeting. And it's grown to, it's part of my life. It's 7 days a week and 5 nights a week job. Again, I'd like to tell one story about my previous drinking. I had a brother in Dallas, Texas that flew all the way to Atlanta to give my wife help for letting me drink liquor. And she said that she needed all the help she could to keep me from drinking. But anyway, he went back home, and today his daughter-in-law has over 10 years of sobriety, and his little grandbaby has 4 years of sobriety, and then I have another nephew that has 3 years of sobriety, so if I haven't done anything other than stay sober, I've worked on these good Baptists and Methodists in my family to find out that alcoholism is an illness, and it is treatable to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, I want to thank all of you for letting me share with you this evening. Thank you.
Thank Joe, Liz.
Oh, boy. I am Liz Elizabeth Flunnison. I am an alcoholic. I guess, pardon this personal reference, but I always get back to the point of John. It says in his talk that I gave him my last dollar that helped him get sober, but I'm inclined to believe it helped me also, because I went to the meeting with him to be sure that he was going to stop. Not that I thought that I was an alcoholic, no, not me. But I was going to be sure he was going to stop so I wouldn't have to divide what I had with him. And so by that, then I got to thinking too, when I went to this first meeting, it was just four men, I was the only woman. Three men, I think. Anyhow, I was the only woman. And to listen to their stories, what they had to tell, sharing with, you know, one another, I was just listening, and I said, well, my God, they must have been peeping through the keyhole at me somewhere. Because what they said applied to me, I just identified with everything all of them had to say, and I said, heck, I must be just as much alcoholic as they are. So, and then I got to thinking, coming home, I said, well, now if the man is going to stop drinking, It would show such a little respect if I'm going to be laying up in a bed with him drunk and he going to try to stay sober. I said, oh, hell, I'm going to kick the habit. Forget it. And that's just the way I did it. But I didn't once think that I would. I just thought I always could quit when I got ready, but it did get to the point that I couldn't quit when I got ready. So it was really kind of messy, but I've never talked at an AA meeting because I always feel like I don't have too much to say. But you don't have to talk. You can empty ashtrays. You can help set up a meeting. There are plenty of things to be done in an AA meeting besides talking. So I enjoy the meetings, and I go to several with John, and a lot of them I don't go. But I'm just about happy as any gal you ever seen, especially since I learned to care for me. I used to give a damn about me, you know. But since I learned to like me a little bit, I'm quite comfortable. Thank you very much.
I'm Mary Campbell, grateful alcoholic.
Amen.
That's the first time I've said that. I never have felt that I was really grateful, because I went into, in 1939 in New York, to get help for my brother. I had gone to get to New York to get drunk and run around and have a good time. My brother had a real problem and died at 41, an alcoholic. He couldn't accept the problem. Couldn't accept the program. Excuse me. But fortunately, after reading the book, my father had bought it in 39, the book came out, and I started reading it, and I had my first husband was an alcoholic. I found answers for him. I found them for me. I found what I was looking for all my life. I found a way of living that we had been taught, but never saw people really living it. That summer, I saw people living the program of doing for others with no thought of what they were going to get out of it, other than that by helping them, they got help themselves. This was always the way the meeting started. I'm telling my story. Maybe you can identify with it. And there was about a half an hour of talk, and then people would discuss it afterward. They were small. They met in apartments. They met in Bert Taylor's cutting room. And it was a very happy summer for me that one time. But then after that, I had to go back to Toledo, Ohio, and I did. There were no meetings there at that time, but was able to talk to my minister, and he said, "Well, you've been alone too much." Well, who doesn't know that with my drinking? And I said, "But for the grace of God, any story I hear, whether they've been in jail or whether they've been streetwalkers or whatever, but for His grace, I could have been the same had I continued drinking." I came back, and started attending meetings in 58 in Atlanta. We moved back from Toledo to New York, and New York to Atlanta. Atlanta is my home. That's when I started my drinking at 17 in high school. That was during Prohibition. And I started going to meetings at the group. They were meeting not in the Scout Hut at that time. There was a meeting in a room in the Was it in the church, Clarence? In the church. And how what a fortunate thing for me. I went back in March of 58, and in August of 58, my son was killed. And I went, that happened on a Saturday, and on a Tuesday, I was in AA meeting. Because there are the people that know what it's all about when you have sorrow or what. And I just lost myself, as I said, thinking of other people's problems and what to do. This is the name of whatever AA is. It's given me a new life in so many ways that, and from AA I now belong to an all-women's group. When I had gone into AA, I wanted to help women. And I said, 20 years later or more, I have been in groups at NABBA Club and at the Howe Group in Decatur. And I don't get to go as much because I'm getting older, can't do the driving at night that I used to do. But I'm eternally grateful for AA. And if everybody would just remember that your thoughts for other people are the thing that save your life. Thank you, Jesus.
I'm Dan Shoemaker, and I'm an alcoholic. And,
Hello, Dan.
I'm mighty happy to be included on this meeting this afternoon. I guess I'm the youngest member here. But that is in AA history, but I always want to remember my first meeting was in Charlotte, North Carolina, February 7th, 1958, and I walked into a room looking for help. I thought perhaps I was a unique individual, sort of like an outcast, different from anyone else, and the greatest relief in the world came to me that night to find that I was not alone, that I was amongst other alcoholics suffering from the same blackouts, remorsefulness, periods of despair, just like I'd been going through. And there's a couple of charlatans in here this afternoon, and the first person I met that night was Hobo, celebrating his fourth birthday. And I'd always known Hobo as the town drunk. But he's a fellow who stuck his hand out to greet me. I came to Atlanta in December of 58, and became a member of the Decatur group. I had a mishap because of my own undoing. I was 31 years old at the time and thought that had some crazy thinking come into my mind that things were a little different in Georgia than they were in North Carolina, and I drank again in 1959. My last drink was May the 10th, 1959, but it was my own doing. I dropped away from meetings. I didn't listen to some of the people that had been here before me. I didn't stay with a sponsor. I didn't confide, so I drank again. And but since 1959, I remember going over to you mentioned Skyland Group, Buckhead Group, Crosstown, and then, you know, I can't remember the name of the group. You mentioned a while ago, I think, Clarence Sylvan Heights. I remember Henry Marks down there, those two people. And then being a traveling salesman, I met a lot of people out on the road that helped me. But I cannot add anything to what's already been said about the growth. Everybody's seen it, and there's been just a lot of groups come about since then. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. My name's Walt Dunlap, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. This is really a high point I've looked forward to for a long time, because these are the people that I feel like I grew up with, that I've been associated with for many years, and every one of these people have had a great effect on my life. I truly believe that I'm one of the most blessed men on the face of the earth. I have been enjoying life to the fullest. I have everything that I need to enjoy life. I love to hear the birds sing. I love to just enjoy inhaling a good breath of clean air. It wasn't always so. I think I was the most miserable man on the face of the earth. When I climbed those 28 stairs to the AA meeting on November the 28th of 1946, I had about as bad a problem with drugs as I did with alcohol. Alcohol was a lot more expensive, and I could get drugs easier for less money. And of course, my mind was all confused. And the sponsors began to reason with me that I must accept the fact that I was an alcoholic, could not control my life. Another thing that was hard for me to accept was a higher power that I must commit my life over to. These things I could not accept. I think 22 days was the longest I went without a drink. I was drugged up during the good part of that time, and it cost me 2 years of my life. I had to spend a long period of time at Milledgeville State Hospital after several attempts at suicide. It was during that period of time I had my throat cut. I was stabbed any number of times and left for dead. And I was as near death as anybody could be on March 23rd of 1948 when I found AA. It was a sober member who introduced me to the creator of this universe. And he persuaded me that this creator had the power to help me when it was impossible for me to live 24 hours sober. And he made it sound so reasonable that I began to believe maybe there was some hope for me. That was March 23rd of 1948. There I found love and understanding that I'd never known before. I found the compassion of friendships. I really didn't believe that people on this earth cared about each other. They were all thinking of number one. Nobody was willing to go to any exertion to help anyone else, but I found people that did help me. My first job, my first car, and any and everything that I received, I got through AA and the friendliness of the people. And every one of these knew I had no money, there's no way I could repay them, or nothing I could do to repay them in any way. They did it out of love. Now, the people that ministered to me didn't say, "I love you." They probably was afraid Anita Bryant might be listening. But they demonstrated love in everything they did and said. They showed love. One man taught me to play chess and said, "Walt, spend some time with me and we'll play chess." Another man helped me by, he had a backyard full of beagles and red-bone hounds, and we'd go sit out on the mountainside and listen to those hounds run. When I got to where I was just near to distraction, over the years, alcohol and drugs had become a way of life, and these things didn't fall away so easily. But I found people that were interested in me. And they asked me to call any time I needed help, and they were always ready. Now, I enjoyed this life. We would go by the downtown club every night about 9:30, and I'd carry armload of morning constitutions and fellowship with the fellas, and it became a way of life. Everything that I did was wrapped up in AA. All my friends in AA. But also a number of the people that I worked with would tell me, "Walt, why do you go to the AA meetings? Why do you go down there every night?" And I've turned down large amounts of overtime when I could have used that money. On account of I had an AA meeting to attend. I was being foreman there for 17 years. I got in trouble with the company. Lots of time they'd get on me. "You're supposed to be here when this machine's being rebuilt." I said, "I got to go to an AA meeting tonight." And these people would say, "Walt, I've known you for over 20 years. I never heard of you taking a drink. How come you go to those places?" And some of that soaked in. I began to reason, "Well, it's been 25 and a half years now. I haven't tasted any alcohol at all. No drugs, no substitute for a drink." And one day somebody handed me a glass of beer on the assurance that it had not been pasteurized. All that I'd ever drank out of a bottle had been pasteurized. He said, "You've never tasted it now. This comes right out of the vat. It's not pasteurized. It tastes entirely different." Well, I drank that glass, and it didn't blow up a volcano inside of me. I didn't feel any great earth-shaking eruption inside. And it was strange to me. It was the next day there that I took a glass of scotch. It didn't have any tremendous effect. I said, "All these years, I've been thinking I was an alcoholic. And I surely am not." But you know what happened. Before the week was out, I was stone drunk, lying flat on my back. And you read in the big book how alcoholism is a progressive disease. All the years that you've not been drinking, your disease has been progressing. And it'll be that much shorter period of time before you're back down on your fanny again. It took 11 months for the company to be completely and totally disillusioned with me. I went to AA meetings during that period of time hoping something would rub off on me. I wanted to quit, but I could not. I'd leave and go by the liquor store after the meetings. And I had to be forcibly restrained. The company paid my full salary and hospitalization for 90 days. And I had to be put in a place where I couldn't walk out, I couldn't hire anybody, I couldn't bribe anybody, like Jim was talking about Blackman's Sanitarium. I'm an old alumnus of Blackman's Sanitarium. There's always somebody there to bring you a bottle if you got too hard up. But at this place, nobody would bring you anything. And that was the only way I could ever get sober. Now, Sunday before last, I passed my 5th birthday. That, to me, is more important than the 25th birthday that I celebrated in 73. After all, like Jim said, birthdays are not important. Life is, and fellowship and love and understanding. These things I found in AA. Thank you, Joe.
This is Joe Phelan again, and before I pass this microphone back to Neely D, I'd like to share with you three or four phrases that Dr. Bob Smith said 31 years ago. And from all we have heard today, those phrases still are just as true today as they were 31 years ago. And maybe a meeting like this can be a partial bridge from the past to the future. And maybe Dr. Bob's words can be helpful. When asked in December of 1948, when AA then had a population of 50,000 or 60,000, vis-a-vis the well over a million that we have today, he was asked, "What do you think of AA's future?" And Dr. Bob said that if the members of Alcoholics Anonymous are willing to keep this program simple, if they remain willing to believe in a power greater than themselves, as they see that power, if they are willing to get sober and stay sober and do their job, and if they are always ready for free and for fun, to help those less fortunate than themselves. Dr. Bob said that he didn't think that Alcoholics Anonymous would have any problem in continuing to help the millions of sick drunks yet to come. And I'm not going to pass this back to Neely.
I want you to have it. Finish it up anyway.
You can get all the good as input the central office in.
My name is still Fred Norris, and I'm an alcoholic. We spoke about the central office a few minutes ago. Today we have a beautiful central office downtown at 161 Spring Street, room 620. We have a full-time secretary. And I noticed in our bulletin a couple of days ago that we handled over 600 calls last month. So there's an awful lot of activity in the downtown office now. We have an awful lot of people go down to volunteer to help do the work. We are printing a paper now called The Voice, which we mail out to groups for a nominal fee. We have, of course, the answering service. We have an answering service chairman that keeps a network of people all over the city on call 24 hours a day for anybody calling in. We recently, several months ago, went into the literature business. We are selling about $2,000 worth of literature a month now. That's to the groups in the metro area who would like to come down and pick it up, or we mail it to them, which saves us 4, 5, 6 week wait from ordering it from New York. So we've got an awful lot of good things going through our central office downtown. We had about, I think it was 90 visitors in the office last month, which is an awful lot of people in town. There's a lot of motels and hotels that are close to the office, and they're calling in for information about meetings and coming by the office. So we do have a beautiful setup down there. It's a very pretty office. It's well furnished, it's air conditioned, and we've got a good stock of literature for people that want to take advantage of it. And we have a secretary down there who's really very dedicated to the job. She's done an excellent job now for 5 years that she's been there. And I just wish everybody would come down and have a look at what we do have. We have an awful lot of tokens of various kinds for birthdays. That sometimes poses a problem when you want to give somebody a little token. We've got a dozen different kinds down there that would be suitable any time for a birthday. So those of you that would like to, we'd like to have you come down and see this office. It's your office. You're paying for it. Your group is paying for the office, so it's yours. And we want everybody to use it. We have an intergroup meeting we call, that's an intergroup representative from every group that cares to send one down there. The third Tuesday in every month. And we have anywhere from 30 to 50 intergroup representatives there every month. And right now we're in the process of trying to increase that. With 140 groups, we think we ought to have more intergroup reps. So I am going to the Prentice tomorrow morning with something I have written up, and I've got a couple other people to help me kind of finalize it. And we're going to have it printed up tomorrow and pass out to the groups to let them know what intergroup is and why we need you down there. So everything in AA is AA. No, there's no one big shot in AA. A lot of them think they are, but they're not. I got a couple little sayings, and I'm going to hush. And I heard them from one of them from Jack. He said, you can tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell him much. And another thing, it's the things you learn after you know it all that's going to really help.
Thanks, Fred. You know, in order to really complete it, we really should hear from everybody. Catherine has been our hostess. Fred has been with her. And above all, Jack has instituted this. And so I'm going to pass it over to Catherine, then Fred, and then Jack.
I am Catherine White, and I'm certainly a grateful recovering alcoholic. I am definitely the youngest here in sobriety, except for my husband, who's just slipped out, and he's just a few months behind me. His name's Fred White, and he came in 1945 before I could make a drink stay down. I probably would have been here a lot sooner. My first resentment was they didn't have Al-Anon in 1945, but I quickly got over that one. But I'm so grateful that when I needed you were all already here, and all these groups were here. And there was not a night in the week or a day in the week that I couldn't find a place where there were people that understood me and were willing to help me, and I've taken full advantage of it. Thank you.
We instituted this and done all the work and set it all up, and Jack C.
Well, mercy. Thank you, Joe. I'm Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Hey, everybody, I don't know where I can say anything or not. I'm sitting here so outside full of goosebumps and inside full of gratitude. I'm one of those that backed into AA. I have a favorite little saying in the few talks that I do make that my wife came in first in 1964, and any woman alcoholic knows what a woman alcoholic looks like, and they're not very pretty to look at, and I let her go to those meetings. You know, I kind of resented the fact that she was leaving me at home. You know, notwithstanding that I was invited to go too, but, you know, I heard somebody mention a while ago, I believe it was Elizabeth, said that I didn't have a problem. While the people that called on Betty were inside talking to her, I was out busy working on my car, supposedly, and I had some beer out there I was drinking while they were in the house talking. And like I started, she went to meetings for about a week, and about 10 days later, the old gal got looking good. Her hair was combed, her lipstick was on straight. And she was taking a bath regularly, and, you know, so I got curious, and I wanted to go down there to see what in the world was going on with those people. And it was at the downtown club, or group. It was a club room by then. It's, I don't know what the number was on P Street, but it was right there close to North Avenue. 598. But I walked in there, and there was a well-groomed-looking bunch of people there, and they were nicely dressed, and they're all clean, all friendly. But I sat back in the corner and had on my, as old saying goes, cleanest dirty shirt. And I thought I was well-dressed. I had on a T-shirt and a pair of Levi's. But they didn't look down on me because of that. But I looked around the room, and I said, well, to myself, I said, there's no way that these people can be in where I've been. And I thought they were more or less telling a bunch of lies when they got up there and told all those stories. But anyway, I did hang around for a while, and that's about what it amounted to, was hanging around, because I didn't accept anything. And Walt mentioned a while ago about the progressive part of this program, and I hung around for about 5 months, and one day I thought I had a good excuse to go back to drinking, and of course we both did. And if you've never had a slip, I pray to God that you never have one, because I thought life had been rough before, but for the next 2 years, I didn't know that life on this earth could be so bad. But anyway, the problem progressed. There was many problems at home. The family was dispersed. Daily drinking, nightly drinking, and just existing. And through the grace of God, he worked it out that we would come back to AA. And in March of 1966, we did come back. But this was not the end of it for me, although my wife did stay sober. I came back and was very active physically in the program, in the group that I belonged to. I even had a first birthday, and it was real good, but I didn't deserve it, because I was not what I call being in the program. Now, I memorized a lot of stuff out of the big book and the 12 and 12 and several other books. And if you wanted the words, I could give them to you, but there was no meaning behind them. So as a result of not having anything inside, when the next problem came along that I couldn't handle, I got drunk again, which is the normal thing for an alcoholic to do, is to drink. But fortunately for me, this drunk only lasted a few days. And like Walt says, it never gets so drunk so quick and blacked out. I was blacked out within 40 minutes. And I've done some things that they told me I've done that I've tried to make amends for, and I hope that I have done it. But I came back to this program for one thing. Not to learn how to quit drinking, because I've done that many times. I heard one fellow say one time that he'd quit drinking 5 times one morning and still ate breakfast drunk as hell. So I came back for one reason. That was to learn how to stay stopped drinking. It's like Fred says, I made that decision every day since. And this was December. The first week in December, I don't know what day it was, so I picked out a real easy day to remember, which was Pearl Harbor Day, December the 7th. I picked that one out so I could remember it very easily. I picked that day for my
day to stop drinking. It might have been a day or two or 3 or 4 days before that, I don't know. But there was real confusion and black cobwebs in my head, and I didn't know for sure, so I just waited until I was sure. But through this program and the grace of God, as I understand him, I came back to this program and I got into the middle of it. I've been very active, and I've listened to these people talk today, and it's been two threads that's run constantly throughout all the talks. Is it being in service to other people, you can relieve your own problems? And to keep this program, you have to give it away. And I've tried to do this. I'm not an expert at it, and don't ever expect to be. But in my small way, I've tried to do a little. And I ain't gonna take no credit for helping nobody, because if I take credit for that, then I'm gonna have to take the blame for those that didn't make it. And me being what I am today, I can't live with it. But this is a complete contradiction of my life from what it was before, because I was the most conceited, selfish, self-centered person, in my opinion, that ever walked this earth. Now, I've not changed totally and don't ever expect to. The program says that I have to make progress, and I have made progress, and I expect to make some more. And you just don't... You can listen to this tape and get a feeling from it, but there's no way that you can get the feeling that I have of being here in person and so honored to be among the older members, not in years, but in sobriety, and the qualities, to my opinion, that is here. And I'm just so grateful that I have had a part in it. Although Joe says I'm the instigator, I'm not. I was more or less commissioned by the central office to get into this, and I think it's one of the greatest things that's happened to the central office, and also one of the most beneficial things that's ever happened to me, other than getting sober, because I have got to meet so many people that I would not have come this close contact to. And there will be others later. I have several other people to get to know. I already know them, but I want to get to know them personally and get them put on tape and put it to central office. So through the grace of God in this program, I just want to thank all the members of AA and the ones that I've come in contact with and helped me so much. And I just can't say any more. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Jack. I'm now going to pass it back to our chair lady, Neely, for the closing of this meeting.
I think this has just been great. As Jack said, I've been sitting here listening to the talks and just thinking about AA in Atlanta. And right here this afternoon, this hour and a half, there certainly is a lot of basic AA on those tapes. A lot of it. And I do appreciate you coming. I appreciate everything that you are doing to make AA what it is in Atlanta today. As you people know, found out in March or April that I had cancer, can't be operated on, and I'm having trouble had trouble with my left leg, and they thought it was arthritis. They still think it is, and they don't think it's related to the cancer. They don't know. I've had all the x-ray and all the cobalt that I can take, so I'm living one day at a time. I just hope that the time will come soon, maybe, when I'll have a recession, or what do they say? something. Remission, yeah. I have a remission, and I get to feeling good again. My main problem is that I'm not getting to AA, but I've stopped letting that be a problem. I've stopped worrying about it. I can't go because I can't sit that long. I can't stay comfortable that long. And when the meeting's over, and I can't be around a crowd that long. So I just have made my mind up until I do get better. I'm just not going to make the effort unless it's something special and I feel real good and I think I can be there. So I doubly enjoy getting with you people like this afternoon. You know where I live, and all of you come to see me whenever you can. This has just been a great afternoon, and thank all of you for coming. Shall we close with the Lord's Prayer? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us of our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. Amen.